I just have a desire to be great. You know, that's one of the main things. The fact that it's another man on the other side of the ring that wants to hurt me.
I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time.
He can bring the pressure. He can box. I'm a true champion. I'm willing to go to his turvy. I'm a step on him. I'm a crush him. Y'all can mark my word to this. I'm a crush him. He's a C-plus fighter. I'm an A-plus fighter because I'm a dominator. This guy is flat for these swing wild. I'm not worried about who his trainer is because the trainer can't get in there and fight for him already, mentally, physically, because I'm a team like he's a C-plus fighter. I'm a dominator. I'm a dominant fighter. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal, most vicious, and most ruthless champion that's ever been. There's no one to stop me. Link with the conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like I'm from Nairport. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat your children.
Can you? Listen, your concentration is leaving a little bit. We're at a home where we're supposed to be. Flames don't intimidate us. What do? We control the flames.
Welcome, everyone. This is episode 35, season 2 of the Standing Aid podcast. We have a full panel tonight. We got Michael Gomes, Daniel Pena, Tommy Rush Jr., and Courtney Tanner. We got a myriad of topics coming your way. We're going to review the heavyweight landscape, the middleweight landscape, the fights that happened this over the weekend. Charlo with his knockout victory, as long as Rigondeaux. So let me bring my co-hosts online with me. Daniel, Tommy, D-Rock, Courtney, Michael, how's everyone doing?
What's up?
Hey, I'm blessed. Yo,
great.
I'm feeling like the franchise champion right now. I'm feeling like the franchise champion.
That'll be one of the main topics coming up. But first, let's revisit the heavyweight landscape division, because I believe we came in and out of that topic on the previous episode, mostly because we had the great Regis Prograis on. But let's start off with Tyson Fury's ESPN Las Vegas debut. Michael Gomes, I'll start off with you. What did you think of his exhibition debut on ESPN in Las Vegas that night?
I'm laughing because you called it an exhibition, because that's what it felt like. I thought it was pretty good. You know, obviously his opponent wasn't, you know, really a worthy opponent, not someone that carries a big name at all. In fact, probably most casual and some boxing pundits probably have never seen or heard of Schwartz, you know, with good reason, obviously. But I thought, I mean, overall, it was a great exhibition on the part of Tyson Fury. There was a lot of, there was a lot of skepticism regarding whether or not he's going to be able to fill up seats. But, you know, I watched it on TV and I saw a lot of big name A celebrities that came out to watch him fight. And that tells me a little bit about Tyson Fury and his popularity and what he has to gain in the U.S. And obviously Top Rank is going to do, Top Rank and DAZN are going to do a good job at, you know, promoting him here in the U.S. and giving him the platform that he needs in order for him to obviously bank on the second fight against Fury. And somebody mentioned something, against Deontay. Someone said something the other day regarding, and I don't know who it is, but regarding the second fight. The second fight, the rematch, is going to do very, very, very good numbers. In fact, I think it's going to do great numbers, because one thing that Tyson Fury is, besides the fact that he's a great boxer, is that he's also a great entertainer. And the U.S., you know, the residents of the U.S., the boxing pundits, the casuals in the U.S. love an entertainer. And that's what he does. He put on a great exhibition. He looked very good. Courtney, last, I think, last episode, he mentioned that he looked like a power forward. And I can't tell you the last time I've seen him in a better shape or in better shape than what I saw him in his last fight in the U.S. So, you know, there's it's going to be interesting as far as how his popularity is going to continue to grow here in the U.S. We all know that overseas he's probably the second biggest, boxer in terms of popularity. He might be the biggest one now after AJ's loss. Let's see how his fans and the fans of the UK are going to treat AJ after that loss against Andy Ruiz. He's going to have to avenge his loss in order for him to get the hearts back from his fans. But right now, I would say Tyson Fury is the biggest boxer on the other side of the pond.
I agree. And, you know, someone mentioned this in the Pound for Pound group. Tyson Fury's decision to team up alongside with his promoter Frank Warren with Top Rank, it was more of a power move to, you know, gain him more leverage with when you negotiate again with Deontay Wilder. So with Top Rank behind his back now, it's going to pull in more money for Tyson Fury, which should be interesting. Courtney Tatter, to transition to you, what was your reaction to the rings placing Tyson Fury as number one in the heavyweight rankings? And you're also welcome to add on or respond to the points Michael Gomes made.
I mean, first off, I want to address the point where, you know, people are saying that he's got more leverage for going with the ESPN deal. I think I couldn't see that as more opposite per se. I mean, it was a move where he went where the money was at, and nobody, maybe with the exception of DAZN, could have given him more money to take the deal that he took, and especially to fight the caliber of opponent that he fought in Tom Schwartz. You know, it's one thing to analyze and break down the exhibition for what it was per se, and that's basically what it was, rolling him out in front of a new audience on ESPN. But I mean, he obviously fought a guy who didn't come to win; just came to make a show of it. Anytime you're blowing kisses and you know, dry humping a guy who you're about to fight at the weigh-in and at the presser, that put the writing on the wall for me as in terms of the caliber of competition and where his opposition's their head was at. But I mean, with Fury going to with him and Frank Warren tacking on a deal with ESPN, ESPN Plus, that was a money move. That was financial. And I mean, of course, you can't hate on it in this era where guys are essentially going where the money is at and going in terms of where they'll make get the best financial deal. Yeah, I mean, you can't hate on that. Floyd changed the game with that. That's just where we are with boxing and this new era of the heavyweight division. But in terms of Fury having any type of leverage with Deontay Wilder in the rematch, I think what it did is it just made them further apart. I could be proven wrong, seeing the sincerity of both sides in terms of coming together despite their television deals to make the fight. But at present, it just seems it threw another variable in the negotiations, because now we have to settle up how the fight is going to be presented and broadcast and produced and offered up to the fans. But, I mean, I hope we see it. I hope there's room where him and Deontay Wilder and both promotional entities and all networks involved can make, basically can recoup and make a profit off it, and we can see a rematch to a very intriguing fight that basically set the tone for where we are in this new heavyweight era. But in terms of Tyson Fury on the surface, you know, what's not the love in seeing his performance and seeing how he's looking these days. He's trim. He's not even in all the, in terms of that, he's not even all the way in tip top or premier shape. So you know, he's Tyson Fury is a problem either way you hash it, either way you look at it, because he's only going to be looking better. But in terms of where he stands in the rankings of how the heavyweight division breaks down. I'm gonna have to salute ESPN in taking their approach in that they were objective in basically bumping up Deontay Wilder as their number one heavyweight, and I think that's who deserves to be number one. And I think ESPN got that right. And also at the number two spot, they put Andy Ruiz up there. You got to rank Andy Ruiz highly and give him his just due and his credit for dethroning Anthony Joshua in the fashion that he did. And I believe ESPN has Tyson Fury at number three. And I think that's fair. And I think that's definitely where I would personally rank Tyson Fury in terms of the top 10 of the heavyweight division at the moment.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Since you ended your point with Andy Ruiz, let's revisit that fight with Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua, because we didn't have enough time to go over that fight. Daniel,
and I'm sorry. Before we get into the Andy Ruiz, I want to make a point about Tyson Fury, and especially Courtney. I mean, on the Deontay Wilder and. There's such a double standard with a lot of the opinions of boxing fans, because all of the antics and showmanship and the yelling and things that people are loving about Tyson Fury, we've been getting that from Deontay Wilder for years, in addition to devastating knockouts. Tyson Fury to be getting all these accolades and recognition is really bothersome to me, because we've had that for a while now. And no one's been giving him the recognition. You know, rightly so, Tyson Fury is not ranked number one by ESPN, because three of his last four fights in about 4.5 years were against no names. So we got to keep that in perspective when we're judging this this rankings that are going around. And he does look good. He does look in better shape. He does look focused. Who the hell is Tom Schwartz? That's where we have to end that. Really, you know, we knew the outcome of that fight, as Courtney mentioned or alluded to, prior to the fight even going down. You know, we're falling in love with a big man who can move without realizing, you know what, he doesn't have a belt. Let's keep it 100%. He does not hold a belt. There's no reason why the Ringman of the Dean should have him as the number one heavyweight just based off of perspective or potential. He does not hold the belt, and that's a complete disrespect to Deontay Wilder and Andy Ruiz.
Whoa. I got to interject. I could see the argument not putting him number one, but I could also see the argument about putting him number one, because we all saw what happened against Deontay. He won the fight.
Michael,
I know you want to make a case.
Michael,
I know you
want
to make a case.
Mike, on paper,
but
no matter how you want to feel, congratulations.
Congratulations.
That's an opinion.
It's not an opinion. I mean,
that's a beautiful opinion, because the paper says it was a draw. Tyson Fury.
Yeah, I mean, the paper says
Tyson
that
Fury,
Canelo won Triple G, and I mean, and paper has. Winning the second fight against Juan Marquez,
Are we really talking unofficial?
That's what I'm saying. So those are official results, and their rankings are reflective of their champion status. Tyson Fury does not hold the belt. He should not be number one. He should not even be number two. He does not hold a piece of the pie.
I disagree with the number two.
Yep.
Andy Ruiz should not be number two?
No. I don't think who has Andy Ruiz? He lost to Joe Parker, right? Even though
Andy Ruiz holds three of the four major belts.
Correct, because he beat AJ, he beat Anthony Joshua. We understand that. Tyson Fury fucking puts. Listen to me. If Andy Ruiz did what he did, I'm sorry to tell you this, Tyson Fury makes Anthony Joshua look below amateur. below amateur.
But you know what? The rankings are based on accomplishment.
Think, yeah.
They're not based on speculation.
I understand that. Yeah. No,
if it was a fifth, we'd all be drunk.
I understand that. And as far as the entertainment comment, it's a different type of entertainment. It's different. The reason why Deontay gets a lot of shit sometimes is because the comments that he makes off the ring and sometimes on the ring, where he goes and says like, I want to body. Like he's on the radio saying stuff like that.
What about Tyson Fury's? What about his comments towards the LGBT community though? You know what I'm saying? Come on now.
I didn't hear it.
What about Tyson Fury being caught on tape snorting coke? You know what I'm saying? What about Tyson Fury failing doping tests over in England? You know what I'm saying? If you're gonna tell it, then you gotta tell it all. It's just like Usher.
Let's keep the whole narrative in perspective. You coming out and saying like I want to kill somebody in the ring and snorting coke, smoking weed, doing this, drinking. That's a different look.
But you know what? Tyson Fury was going into the ring where he had failed a PED test. He had shit introduced in his system. He could have actually done that shit, though. Come on now. It's one thing to talk it. It's one thing to actually put your competitor's life in danger. You know what I'm saying? I don't condone those comments by Wilder, because death is something you do not come back from. But Wilder, you know, Tyson Fury went into the ring in the United Kingdom with a PED that was introduced into his system and essentially got away with not even a slap on the wrist or what the fuck is a retroactive suspension. You know, if we're going to condemn Wilder for words, we need to condemn Fury for actions that were just as dangerous and were just as destructive to the integrity of the sport.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe that Deontay, because of some of the comments he's made in the past, you believe that it has hurt his image in terms of putting money in his pocket from sponsorship?
No.
Why is
that? Because he's WBC champion. He's knocking everybody the fuck out. That's why.
And he's not fighting Tom Schwartz on
ESPN.
Who is Tyson Fury endorsing, though? What name brands is he in commercials for?
I don't know. We're not overseas.
If we're talking about sponsorships and we're talking about revenue from sponsors and corporations, I mean, like, come on now. Like, it's almost like we're drawing up one as the devil and one as an angel. When, you know what I'm saying, there are no angels in this circumstance.
I'm not saying that. I mean, the debate started off, you know, Tyson Fury being number three, which I think is crazy that you guys got him ranked number three.
I think it's crazy. You're trying to make a case for him as number one.
No. I didn't say
based on what?
I didn't say it.
Based on what?
I didn't say that. Based on I saw him beat Deontay on the ring. Based on that, he rightfully right now should have a belt.
You know what?
The three judges that were ringside
wrote that fight a draw, and that's what it was.
I'm gonna go back. I don't know if I can go back to your comments on Facebook. But other than one person in this chat, in this podcast, other than one person in this podcast, everybody else.
Hold up, we're not gonna put me in a box. We're not gonna put me in a box because you know damn well I stand by everything that I said, and I do believe Fury should have gotten the decision, but he didn't. That's not what fights are judged on. The fights are not judged on my opinion as a pundit. They are judged on the decision that is rendered by the three judges ringside, which I fully respect as a fan of the sport.
You fully respect Adelaide Bird?
That doesn't mean anything. I respect 10 straight title defenses. I respect 10 straight title defenses, and what has Tyson Fury done over the past 5 years?
What do you mean?
I respect 10 straight title defenses, which is, I believe, four fights off from the record. So you're completely throwing that aspect of Deontay Wilder's resume out of the window because you don't like the way he fights and because you believe he lost. Whether you like it or not, he holds the belt. He could fight ass backwards. He has a belt. Tyson Fury does not hold a belt. He has 10 straight title defenses. Tyson Fury does not. For you to even think that he should be ranked above Wilder is Bias.
I didn't say that.
1,000% bias.
So
where's he ranked?
I can see the
argument.
And the other.
No, where's he ranked?
He ranks right below him. Right below him. Above
where?
Andy Ruiz. Above
that
Andy
is the
Ruiz.
Crazy, that is the craziest thing
it's
I've
not
heard.
Crazy.
That's the craziest
it's
thing
not
I've
crazy.
Heard. That's the craziest
I'll
thing I've
what,
heard.
If Andy Ruiz was to fight Tyson Fury, I would put 10. I would literally. I'll tell you right now, with in front of my wife next to me, I would put $10,000. Tyson Fury wins that fight, no problem.
That's a great bet for you.
I'm just saying. No, it's a, he's a better boxer.
That's a great bet for you because the other day I asked you to bet it. You said you don't want to take money from friends, but I'll sign it for you.
No. I would not bet. I don't want to bite Anthony. I didn't want to bet the Anthony Joshua fight.
I'm not betting Anthony Joshua against anybody.
Never.
I'll write the check.
Never. But Tyson Fury is different.
Why?
Completely different. Because he's a much better boxer. For sure.
He's not a champion.
There's only one Tyson Fury.
If we take away the belts, who do you think is the better boxer in the heavyweight division right now? If you take away the belt,
Luis Ortiz.
Come on, Luis Ortiz is fucking 72 years old. Stop that.
Congratulations. You asked me a question. I answered you. He's the best boxer.
Okay,
where's
so you think he's better than all right.
Where's the person?
Take away the belts, take away the age, Luis Ortiz.
So we have two. We have another person that agrees with me.
That's fine.
So where's the argument?
That's fine. And I can understand that. I can't argue against it.
The most skilled heavyweight without a ring is Oleksandr Usyk. How about that one?
Oh man, Tyson Fury got a 25 count. Let's stop.
So let's call it out. I mean, you like Tyson Fury, that's perfectly fine. We know that we're high on Deontay Wilder, but we're not high on him based off of his technical ability because that's the argument that you're trying to make. We're high on him because of where he is. He's defended his title 10 straight times. Tyson Fury has not, and any boxer in any weight class. By any organization who's able to do that should hold a high ranking, whether you like it or not. Andy Ruiz has 3 of the 4 major belts, whether you like it or not, however you cut it, slice it, weigh it, as my man Floyd likes to say, it is what it is. So I answered your question. Who's the most skilled heavyweight without a belt? Luis Ortiz. You don't agree with me? You don't like the answer? Oleksandr Usyk. You like the way he looks. He's flashy. Absolutely. Aesthetically, it's pleasing to see a 6'9 man move like a welterweight. But guess what? He got put on his ass twice. So if he was that skilled, he would have avoided those punches, right?
And he got up both times.
And what happened?
And got up to almost knock Deontay out.
Was he skilled? Listen.
I urge you, watch the fight again. Watch the last round. He got up and still schooled him again. And still schooled him. You got to give him his respect.
15 seconds.
He still lost that round 10-8.
No, 20.
He still lost
you're
that
right,
round
20. 10-8. Because of the knockdown. Only because of the knockdown.
So, only because of the knockdown. Let me see. I kind of remember Julio Cesar Chavez getting his ass whooped by Meldrick Taylor and then getting the fight because of a knockdown with about 10 seconds left. So, knockdown.
You're talking about a robbery.
No. You're trying to marginalize a knockdown as an invalid aspect of the game.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, let's give credit to, you know, you guys are over here talking about all his power. He puts the guy down, he gets up, and he couldn't finish him off, and it looked like he was going to get finished off.
Michael, I've heard you continuously say, give him credit for getting up. Why don't you give Wilder credit for knocking him down?
I'm not going to give him credit because I was expecting Wilder.
Oh,
I was expecting
God.
Deontay. I was expecting Wilder to win with this
Wilder.
You don't give him credit for knocking him. You give him credit for getting up, but not for knocking him down. That's amazing. I think we should move on to Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua.
Wow. Yep. We should. Yeah, we didn't spend proper time on the Andy Ruiz-Anthony Joshua fight, so let's do that right now. Now, Tommy, let me transition to you. What did you think happened? What went wrong for Anthony Joshua from your perspective?
I think that, you know, coming out of the gate, like he overestimated Ruiz's technical ability. He overestimated his amateur experience, and he got caught. He got caught. He did something else that we all know that he's known to do. He gassed out a little bit. And, you know, one thing that was funny to me just about that whole fight was the commentary. You know, the second round, Joshua got a couple good shots in, and they jumped on his shit. Like, he dominated that round. He didn't dominate that round. He may have won that round, but he didn't dominate that round. And it was just – it was like he just completely underestimated this dude. He thought that he was just about to come in there and just put on a really good show. And he got caught slipping point blank, period. You know, he's been playing the media shit and trying to leverage all of this with Wilder. You got to focus on the dude that's in front of you. And, yeah, big dopey, you know, he got out the way. And Ruiz slipped in, you know what I'm saying? He slipped in there and he did his business. He came in there. He was focused. He fought his fight. He didn't fall into Joshua's leverage. You know, he kept his range. He knew when to slip in and slip out, and he caught him. You know, when Ruiz went down, the commentary was unbelievable. Watch this. Joshua's an excellent closer.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they was on his shit. Like, he was about to drop bomb squad. But he didn't. He came with what the best he had at that time. Ruiz did not go down. He withstood it. He stuck to his game, and he put that man down twice in the same round. So all of this shit about anybody and everybody else, when it comes down to this fight right here, Ruiz did his shit. He handled his business. He stuck to his game. He was technical. Joshua stuck to his game. He thought he had to, you know, he thought he could just be big muscle man and do what he could do with that and just be Deontay Wilder. But he couldn't. He gassed out like he's known to do, and he fell victim. Point blank, period.
I agree with it the most part, but one particular like tactic that of Ruiz that caught Joshua off guard was that for the first time, Anthony Joshua, he didn't really know how to respond to successful combos being landed against him on the inside. Like, that's where I think he like went blank in the head and didn't know how to respond to that. And that's where Andy Ruiz had that momentum going on after that brief knockdown. Courtney, what do you think went wrong with Anthony Joshua as far as the upset?
First off, man, I think where he went wrong was he did his damn training camp in South Beach, Miami. Like, come on now. Like, Anthony Joshua swears he did not underestimate Andy Ruiz, but I think that was clearly a fight where Anthony Joshua did not train up to standard and did not train like the defending heavyweight champion of the world.
He was training
I think preparation and his mind state was definitely a problem. Andy Ruiz fought like a man who was being underestimated and who would not be disrespected in that ring. And Anthony Joshua paid dearly for it. Anthony Joshua got caught looking ahead while at the same time carrying the hopes of a nation on his shoulders. And that's what he had to fly into Heathrow to rather than a ticker tape parade. With Andy Ruiz, I want to make some points of order. The first one is for my man Manuel Guevara. I want to say Andy Ruiz is an American heavyweight champion who happens to be of Mexican descent. You know what I'm saying? We keeping him. You know what I'm saying? Those three belts rightfully belong in America. And you know, we can have a greater debate on that if you would like to call in. Secondly, shout out to another, you know, another champion from that that very slept on and underrated 2008 Mexican Olympic squad. You know what I'm saying? We're seeing Andy Ruiz along, continuing a great, you know, lineage they had on that team, along with Oscar Valdez, Oscar Vargas, and a myriad of other champions. A great story, basically on both sides of the border, particularly with the political climate going on in America right now. Andy Ruiz made a statement, and I choose to believe part of that statement was to say fuck Trump. I'm also going to put this in a very real and objective perspective in terms of Andy Ruiz's prospects and his talents within the wider frame of the heavyweight division, in that I don't take anything away from Andy Ruiz. I give him his just due. I give him his best, his just credit. I believe he's ranked rightfully where he is, where he deserves to be ranked by the major publications and the networks and the pundits who have a voice within the ratings of the sport. But in terms of where Andy Ruiz is going to sit in being in the driving seat of this era of the heavyweight division, I'm going to have to see lightning strike twice. And I'm of the personal opinion that the first fight was not a fluke, but I do not think that lightning will strike twice. I think Anthony Joshua will get Andy Ruiz out of there in the rematch, and that's just evidenced by what transpired in that third round before he turned the tide on Anthony Joshua. I believe the first fight tactically was a question or as an issue of Anthony Joshua almost having him dead to rights and just not being able to finish the job for whatever reason, whether it was a focus issue, whether it was fatigue, whether it was like Aaron had said previously, where Anthony Joshua just wasn't prepared for an opponent who was going to counterpunch and land combinations on him. But I think I fully anticipate and expect that Anthony Joshua will make the needed adjustments to basically finish the job the next time around, and those three belts will be headed back to the UK.
Gomes, Michael, what did you think of that fight, and what do you expect in the rematch? Do you think it's going to be more of the same, or we're going to see a complete 180 and Joshua getting his belts back?
The reality of it is Anthony Joshua has one or two corrections that he needs to do, and that's it. He's going to have to fight him the way he fought Joe Parker. I think that Andy Ruiz's height and his ability to fight in the inside because of his height is what played a major factor. Anthony Joshua did not come in correct. He looked bothered right from the start. Don't know why. I mean, I mentioned this before, and I don't know why he was getting his neck massage. He looked like he was a little uncomfortable, and I agree with Courtney. I mean, he shouldn't have – you know, you shouldn't be going to South Beach to train. That's stupid. He definitely needed to be more focused, and you're not going to be focused in South Beach. I've been there 27 times. I've dated girls from there. I know South Beach very well. It's hard to be focused in Miami. Very hard, right? And I think that if the fight does happen, I don't know if there's any if it's been confirmed or not, because I've been hearing conflicting stories that the fight is going to happen in England, or the fight's going to now happen in New York. It's going back and forth. But I think that the second fight, I have to agree with Courtney. I think you'll see Anthony Joshua knock him right out. His reign to the top is going to be short-lived.
Daniel, your thoughts on the fight, and what do you see in the rematch?
I mean, I think it was a great fight. I just to touch slightly on the rankings aspect of that, you know, he was able to gain those three belts, and here's a point. Andy Ruiz didn't just beat Anthony Joshua; he demolished him. He put him on the floor four times and took his heart. After that last knockdown, you can see Anthony Joshua looking over at his corner, telling him, with his eyes. I mean, not verbally, but he didn't want anymore. Andy Reid was giving it to him, and Max Kellerman, out of all people, had the best take on the way the fight, you know, kind of went down. Andy Reid is a lifelong boxer. Those instincts came to play, and they won him the fight. Anthony Joshua, I don't know if he underestimated Andy Ruiz, but he didn't have a game plan for that type of opponent. You know, I think he was too focused on the way he was going to go in there and fight Gerald Miller. Just kind of in there, you know. I do think he would have doubted Gerald Miller because Gerald Miller does not have the type of the same power that an Andy Ruiz has. I think the most unexpected thing for Anthony Joshua in that fight was that Ruiz fought back. So as Tommy said earlier, when the commentators were like, watch this, watch how he finishes, they weren't expecting the guy to be able to slip a left hook and land his own upstairs and then do it again and then land another one and rock him. If you remember the fight when Andy Ruiz landed that hook that shook Anthony Joshua, the commentator didn't even take note right away. And in our discussion, if you guys recall, after that round, I said, unless he knocks him out, he's done. Can you guys remember when I said that?
Yeah, no. I remember.
You know, because I saw it in Anthony Joshua's eyes that his spirit was not there. And maybe it was attributed to his change of training scenery. I lived in Miami. I can tell you. Miami's not the easiest place to stay focused.
Shout out to God.
But whose fault is that? That's Anthony Joshua's fault. So he has to suffer the consequences of losing his belts and getting that L on his record. The good thing for him is he's a charismatic fighter who's still held in the high regard. He's a gold medalist. He's a pretty boy. He's very humble in defeat, which I respect that. He let Andy Ruiz enjoy his shine, but he has to go back to the drawing board and fight like he's an up-and-comer again. Andy Ruiz is not scared of him, and I think he finally realized that the heavyweight division, honestly, he's up for grabs. He's up for grabs. He's not the top dog.
Hey, he didn't let that man his shot. He declined that interview at the post fight, and then when it was time for Ruiz to have his moment and talk, he came over there and interrupted politely, but it was like a passive aggressive type shit. He gave up the moment, let Eddie Hearn speak, and then he came and interrupted Ruiz in his moment. I don't feel he gave him his shine. I feel like he was very passive aggressive with that moment.
Tell him how you really feel, Tony.
Now, moving on to the next segment, this whole franchise champion talk. So before we get everyone's points, let me read the official statement released from the WBC regarding this new designation. So right now I'm quoting them, so it'll be a brief read. So, and I quote, under Rule 3.26, in its discretion, the WBC may, upon a two-third vote of the Board of Governors, designate in each weight category one WBC franchise champion. A franchise champion shall enjoy special status with respect to his or her mandatory obligations, holding multiple titles and competing for titles of other organizations as the WBC Board of Governors rules on a case-by-case basis. And there's five, here are the five conditions under the franchise championship champion tag. Number one, the franchise champion will be designated as WBC Emeritus Champion once he retires from boxing. Number two, the franchise champion will proudly represent the WBC in every single fight as a reigning WBC champion, regardless of any specific conditions or titles being associated with all future fights. Number three, the franchise champion agrees to participate in a minimum of two social responsibility events every year. Number four, the WBC may recognize a WBC champion in the division or divisions where the franchise champion currently competes. Number five, the WBC may award a Diamond Championship belt in those fights in which the franchise champion engages. If the franchise champion loses, the winner will receive a Diamond belt and may be considered as a mandatory contender of the division. So before I move on, as this relates to Canelo and specifically Jermall Charlo, we all know Canelo Alvarez is no longer the full middleweight champion at the WBC. It'll be Jermall Charlo. So let me start with you, Courtney. What's your thoughts on all the confusion surrounding this new designation?
You know, I think this is wrong on so many levels. This is just flat out egregious by the WBC, and they in the eyes of many, not just me, but the eyes of many boxing fans, hardcore, casual, and pundits alike, they've basically delegitimized their belt and their standing as pretty much the gold standard as far as boxing belts. You know, the scene is that, you know, the people who have worn that belt from Muhammad Ali to Sugar Ray Leonard to Mike Tyson to the list goes on. They've disgraced the accomplishments and the memory of everybody who's worn that belt before this moment by basically commercializing the legacy and the position of that belt. If you read the stipulations that go along with that belt, where it says that the holder must attend two events that promote boxing, like that's complete bullshit. So basically, they're saying that if you come to our events and pose with our belt around your waist or your shoulder, and let us tout you as the franchise champion, you can hold this belt. That's complete bullshit. I think what it amounts to is that Canelo is completely disinterested in making the unification and legitimizing the belt by facing his number one contender and his mandatory Jermall Charlo. But it's also a situation where he's probably paid so much in sanctioning fees to the WBC that they can't just let him walk. They can't just let him walk away or throw the belt in the trash or vacate the belt without any semblance of, you know, him being attached to it by name. Also, it's a marketability thing with the WBC in that that belt is not valued as much in the public eye if it has Jermall Charlo, strapping it around his waist as it does for Canelo, because obviously Canelo is the globally and internationally recognized figure, where Jermall is just a very, very talented and very, very skilled boxer. You know, the fact that we're valuing marketability over skill and over talent, which I'm not saying Canelo has none. People obviously know how high I am on Canelo. Head to head, I would favor Canelo to beat up on Charlo, hands down. But I just think that where somebody would be, there would be another lane created for somebody based on money, based on profitability, rather than merit, rather than terms of blood, sweat, and tears, rather than terms of sacrifice, rather than terms of what you've been bringing, or what you bring into the ring against another competitor with your own two hands. I think that's just bogus. I think that's just cheap, and they've really degraded boxing. And I completely condemn the actions of the WBC with that. And lastly, I'll say this: if you go on the ESPN website and you look at their list of champions, which is a list of everybody who holds each organization's belt, Canelo's name is not mentioned as the WBC champion at 160. It's now Jermall Charlo. I just think where it's unfair that they've thrown the status of that belt in limbo is that Canelo beat Triple G for that belt. And now to have Jermall Charlo recognized as the WBC champion, I think that's bogus, because he didn't win it in the ring. I think that the WBC needs to have some fucking integrity and present the belt as it is, and present the status of the belt as it is, in that Jermall Charlo is now a WBC champion, because Canelo Alvarez simply vacated the title because he does not want to defend it in the ring.
Damn, Courtney, so you're saying that that belts and rankings actually do coexist, right? I'm just saying, right? Belts and rankings, they actually belts and rankings actually do mean something. All right, cool. Just my two cents on this. You guys honestly said everything there is to say about it. But you know, I guess as a blessing for Charlo, does give him the option to make a little bit more money in his title defenses coming up. Canelo does have other business interests. Now, it does bother me that the WBC Board of Governors bullshit. That's Mauricio Suleiman's way of making his extra coin whenever he can, and parading Canelo to his benefit.
Diamond Bill.
I also think it's his way of, you know, people talk about ducking Charlo. I think it's their way of ducking Boo Boo.
Interesting.
Because once Boo Boo does his work, which I don't have any doubt that he'll take care of business on Saturday, where else would Canelo have an option to go besides possibly Callum Smith at 168, which a lot of people don't believe that he's ready to make that jump to yet. If Boo Boo goes out there and wins, the Triple G fight falls through, and Charlo defends his belt in upcoming time frame, what options does Canelo have? He's not going to hold out until next May.
It's a tough fight for
and
him.
And if I'm wrong, please correct me at any point.
I agree for the most part. You know, the troublesome thing for me about this whole franchise thing, like, let's say, like, this franchise champion tag, it's like, even if Canelo loses, he still holds that title, that this new designation. That really ticks me off the most about it, and it's just very unfortunate. Tommy, what is your thoughts about this whole situation?
Didn't it say that if he does lose, or if the person loses, then the person that wins becomes like the mandatory or something like that? Didn't it say something like that on number five, I believe?
I believe so. That was one of my statements. That was one of the stipulations I heard. But my biggest takeaway is, hey, franchise champion, we're gonna need you to show up at these Habitat for Humanity events,
right?
And make us some extra money, and make us some extra money. Thank you.
Yeah. They still gonna promote him the way they want to. I mean, we know what this is. Like, this is some silly bullshit that they coming up with just to maximize on what Canelo is and what he's doing right now. Like, I'm completely turned off by all of this. I want to see some fights. Like, get in the ring and do what you need to do.
Word.
Fight Word. Who the fuck you need to fight. Like, continue what got you here. Don't pull the super diva shit that takes the game to a whole different level and like, saturates everything. All of these, now we're getting into made-up diamond belts and all of this stuff, like, with stipulations that have zero interest to people that want to see some fucking fights go down in the ring. You got to go represent the WBC in this way and all of this bullshit. Like, fight who the fuck you need to fight. Let's go.
I agree. Let's see where this situation goes going forward with this new designation. And my last point, it's going to set a bad precedent for even other divisions who will have that tag in the future. But moving on, the next segment, let's review some fights that happened this recent weekend. Jermell Charlo was supposed to fight Tony Harrison, but that was that was postponed doing because of a training injury on Harrison's part. So we have so we had Kota as the replacement, which he was brutally knocked out. Let's get everyone's thoughts on it. Courtney, what was your overall feelings of this rush matchup?
Jermell did exactly what he was supposed to do and looked good doing it. I mean, that's you know, he showed his tag is Lions only. He showed the heart of a lion. You know, that's unfortunately that's a part of the game. Within boxing is that, you know, people get injured. These guys work extremely hard in training camp, and people really they really miss the point in how dangerous a training camp can be, because you're basically training at a high intensity and you're susceptible to injuries. And you know, when they happen, you know, you got to be ready to step in and face anybody, and maybe even a guy that whose style, realistically, you know, you're not necessarily prepared for. You know, we saw what happened when AJ met Anthony Joshua met that type of adversity against Ruiz. As far as opponent, he did not have all this sufficient time necessarily to prepare against that style matchup. That was something he wilted against. Jermell Charlo, he showed the opposite. He's, you know, he basically, as soon as it was announced that Tony Harrison had been injured, He called for the next man up and was like, "Oh, hey, I'll get in there and I'll fight anybody." And when he did, he didn't skip a beat. He didn't miss a step. He went in there and he took care of his guy in brutal and devastating fashion. And that's what a champion does. And hats off to him in his performance. And I wish Tony Harrison a very speedy recovery. Because the rematch is a very intriguing fight, and that's just another one that we as fans deserve to see and deserve to see as soon as possible.
A quick follow up question for you, Courtney, before we transition to we have a guest caller. But Courtney, what's your thoughts on the match, on the delayed rematch? What are your thoughts on that?
The rematch with Jermell Charlo and Tony Harrison?
Yeah.
I think personally, yeah, when I saw the first fight, I believe that Jermell probably should have gotten the decision. I don't think Tony Harrison, I think he fought a very credible fight. I don't think he did quite enough to dethrone a champion. But I mean, that's how decisions go. That's how close fights go. And I think it was truly a caliber of fight where it could per se have gone either way. So now that Tony Harrison is the champion, I think it's going to be a very intriguing fight, because if you look at Tony Harrison in the two fights that he had lost before then, he was given a very, very, very culpable account of himself. And in some views, winning the two fights that he lost, where he'd gotten stopped by Willie Nelson and by Jared Hurd. I think in that fight, that first fight with Jermell, he basically made the adjustment that he wasn't able to make in those first two fights, in that he was boxing. He was looking good. He was possibly winning, but then he got drawn into a firefight and he lost. He didn't allow that to happen against Jermell Charlo. He stuck to his game plan. He was behind his jab. He was showing good lateral movement, and he wasn't letting Jermell Charlo do what he wanted to do in terms of cutting off the ring, cornering him, and catching him with those big devastating shots and combinations that Jermell Charlo is known for. They say when you get a belt, you become 50% better as a champion. So if that adage is true, I think we're in for another hell of a fight. And I think, in my view, at present on the surface right now, I'm going to say that it's pretty much a 50-50 matchup between Jermell and Tony Harrison. But if pressed to pick a winner in that fight, I'm going to say I would predict Jermell Charlo to get his belt back.
Yeah, I mean, I want to focus on the fight itself, the matchup, and what just transpired as well. I think it was very good that Jermell won the fight in the emphatic fashion that he did. It does remind a lot of us who have that taste from the Harrison fight in back of our mouths that, you know, he is capable of that type of performance. I do, however, I do not believe that he has improved much or has changed any aspect or added any different aspect to his game. If you look at the way he fights, he stays tight up top most of the time, always throws a double jab and a straight right down the middle. And when he got the first knockdown, that's exactly what he did it. He missed that right hand. So Harrison in the first fight was able to time that perfectly throughout most of the fight and land his jabs. So for Jermell to be able to, you know, have more of a decisive victory in some people's eyes or to actually separate himself, he's going to have to add a different element to his game. Cotto was not much of a game fighter. He does have a decent record, but it gets a lower-tier competition. Recently, I forgot where I read it. Maybe you guys have read it. Jermell has gone out and started talking shit against J-Rock, saying that he sunned him and that he wants his rematch so the same shit can happen in the second fight. I don't know if any of you guys saw that, but I think that's complete bullshit because in the same way I'm talking about Charlo not adding anything to his game, I saw J-Rock add tons to his game. And I think that rematch in itself will play out very differently.
I just want a quick redirect on that. I would relish the opportunity to see a rematch between J-Rock and Charlo because I want to see I would love to see J-Rock getting that ass on a revenge tip because I'm still seething at the level of disrespect and the utter absence of class that Jermell Charlo showed after stopping J-Rock. So as a fan, purely on the basis of being a fan, I would relish the opportunity to see J-Rock basically give Jermell his comeuppance for being such a disrespectful prick after that first meeting.
Yo, but Corey, you forgot. Jermell don't even play video games because he don't like to lose. He only play video games because he don't like to lose.
Good stuff, guys. Good stuff. We have a special guest caller in. He's a big supporter of our Facebook group, Pound for Pound. Phil Mosley from Virginia. Correct me if I'm wrong. Phil, you on?
Yes, sir. What's going on?
What's good?
What up, man?
Welcome to the podcast. Share your thoughts. The mic is yours.
We speaking on the Charlo fight.
Yeah. So Phil, very quickly, what you saw about that fight and any predictions as far as the division holds for him in particular, the upcoming what should have been the fight with Tony Harrison, and the landscape in that division after his performance.
I think after hearing what's his name? But the guy you're supposed to fight, Harrison. That's his name, right?
Tony Harrison.
Yeah. After hearing him speak in one of those interviews, I don't think the injury was as significant as he made. I think he got hit. I think he got injured in one of those sparring matchups because I was hearing that he got knocked out. And when someone asked him about it, he said, well, you know, things happen and this is the hurt business. And I'm just like, so he didn't deny it. So that's probably, I believe, is one of the things that stopped the fight. I believe he did have an ankle injury, but I don't think it was enough for him to pull out the fight. As far as Charlo, he just got to keep his nose clean, keep his head down, and keep going, fight the necessary fights to get the belt back. I don't know if Harrison want to fight him, if you ask me. I think it was a strategic plan to make, you know, Charlo think he was going to get a rematch and then pull out to get in his head, if you ask me.
Hey, Phil, we fuck with you heavy in the Pound for Pound group, and you have a, you know, basically today – You put a lot out there in the group, made some bold you know, observations and some predictions. Well, you know, say we're particularly interested in hearing from you on the show. Is we want to get your thoughts on the state of a boxing in terms of the things, you know, the topics you were bringing up today within the group. So basically, just consider this this mic your free form to you know, say to say what you got to say, man.
Kick that shit.
I bet. So check this out. I think with the rules of Pacquiao and Thurman not having to go through, I guess, the quote-unquote Olympic-style drug test. I mean, we know it's going to be some drug testing involved, of course. That's just boxing. You got to do that or it's not going to be right. But I think that's a slight advantage for Pacquiao, if you ask me. I mean, I'm not saying he's on anything, but now he can take the supplements you need to take to not, you know, feel the pain of a 40-year-old man boxing. You know, certain, you can go to a GMC store and take something and fail a drug test. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a PED. So now I believe he can take those things to help him. I think that's going to be, like, a real big advantage. I don't think he's going to knock Thurman out or nothing, but I do think he gets a decision, split decision at the end. It possibly a controversial decision for Pacquiao. I believe they wanted Pac-Man to fight Earl anyway, but to keep Thurman from, you know, requesting that rematch with Sean, they gave him Pacquiao so Earl could possibly get the belt from Porter to force a fight with Pacquiao. What else was on my list that I had that people? The Floyd Mayweather and the Nissan Pacquiao's career is a little bit better than Floyd. Now don't get me wrong. I don't think Pacquiao's a better boxer than Floyd. I don't think that at all. But I think Pacquiao taking on Thurman and possibly an Errol Spence or a Sean Porter, depending on if Pacquiao wins, that's huge. Because Floyd, to me, played it safe at the end. I mean, I know it's big money to be made, and it's a business, and at the end of the day, he was thinking about his health. I ain't mad at him for that, but if we gonna box, let's box. You can't play boxing, and I feel like that's what Floyd was doing towards the end of his career, just getting a check and getting out of there. So, from that standpoint, in my opinion, I'm going Pac. If I had to pick a career, I'm going Pac. I think he edging a little bit over Floyd just because he's willing to fight these young bucks. And I don't know if he's forced to do it or not, but y'all wanna go back and forth on that note. I know Courtney has some things to say about that.
You know, hey, thanks for the redirect, man. I know we you know, so we got into it a little bit. Jumped into that a little bit on the in the group, and you know, in terms of how I feel about that on the air, you know, I can respect the perspective that if you or anybody was going to stack the two careers of the two against each other and say that, you know, Pacquiao had more of that fan satisfying or that crowd pleasing career, or that, you know, that resume or that record. Because of the level of fights, because of the level of challenges he took, because of the level of adversity he came back from, I could see where somebody would, you know, saying would take, given the choice between the two, would choose Pacquiao. I think if you look at Pacquiao's career in almost his 70 fights, you know, he's had more of a traditional boxing career in terms of which you would look at. In comparison to all the other people who are on the heavy, who are the all-time greats list, you know what I'm saying? If you stack Pacquiao in there with Sugar Ray Leonard, Sugar Ray Robinson, an Ali, a Mike Tyson, a Roberto Duran, you could say that Pacquiao had a career that was along that trajectory, because he was active over decades. started his career at a younger age, fought his way into the public consciousness from basically obscurity, had to overcome some devastating losses and setbacks in his career. And then basically, if you look at Pacquiao, he fought back and he came back to the public eye. He came back to the consciousness every time. So I really have no shade or against anybody who would say, well, if you put Pacquiao and Floyd's career side by side, I'm going with Pacquiao. So I mean, because Pacquiao, I mean, he had that deep resume. He had that deep career, and it had ebbs and flows. It had ups and downs. You know, the fact that Pacquiao could have, you know, when he took that L to Marquez in that fourth fight and basically fought his way back to where people were still demanding that Floyd Pacquiao fight, that says something about him as a fighter, that says something about his legacy, that says something about his character as a fighter and a champion and as a human being. I hate doing this, but in terms of like the personality or whatever, Pacquiao's the more likable and celebrated, a figure. I mean, it's easy to celebrate a figure like Pacquiao because of what he's done in his home country, what he's done for raising boxing in the public consciousness, for what its accessibility, for what he's done for the poor, and all his humanitarian tip like that. You know what I'm saying? Pacquiao was a genuine people, quote unquote, people's champion type hero type dude. Where I come from, where I'm coming from on this personally, is if you stack them against each other, Pacquiao and Floyd, I'm gonna go with Floyd all day, every day, because you look at Floyd's numbers, man, and you look at Floyd's resume, and you look at the level of competition with Floyd. It's irrefutable. You know what I'm saying? People can look at it and analyze and poke holes. And, you know what I'm saying, this person, well, he didn't get this person at his prime. Or, you know, this person was bubbling in his era and he didn't fight him. You can do that with anybody's career. You know what I'm saying? I don't care who you are, how many fights you had, you know what I'm saying, if you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, anybody can sit down, open up the ledger, and dissect and poke holes through anybody's resume. And that certainly can be done with Floyd's. But if you look at where Floyd started and where he ended, he kept it thorough, and where Floyd transitioned seamlessly through those decades and through those multiple eras in which he fought in, I think Floyd has had one of the most seamless careers in terms of what he was able to do against those legendary fighters in the eras that he fought in. 5 weight divisions, 12 titles, 25, at least 25 current or future Hall of Famers. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we're going to look at the resume and level of competition and the accomplishments and what they did and how they did it against the level of competition, it's really that's not a comparison or argument you can make when comparing the two with Floyd and Pacquiao. You know what I'm saying? Were there some caveats? Yes. You know what I'm saying? Pacquiao had a few semi-retirements. He wasn't as active, didn't start at as early an age as Pacquiao, but you also have to give him credit for that too, because you were looking at Floyd as a person who was getting older, who was coming off long layoffs, and every time he came back against dangerous dudes, and he came back just as thorough. And the thing with Pacquiao, we're seeing Pacquiao age, not necessarily because of the inevitability of what happens to a human body as they age, because that's happened to Floyd too. But look at how they've dealt with that too. You know what I'm saying? Look at what we're seeing Pacquiao is that he has never really been able to adapt his style to progress and to contend and to transcend his level of competition. There's, you know what I'm saying, absolutely. It's always been areas where you can look, Pacquiao, let's see, in comparison with Pacquiao and Thurman at this point, it's kind of like, I don't know, it could be 50-50, I don't know. But like, let's say when Floyd fought Canelo, and you know what I'm saying, you brought Canelo in, that having the size advantages, being, you know, having the youth advantage, and being that Floyd was getting older, Floyd didn't have his legs, and Floyd was still a clear favorite against Pacquiao. I mean, I'm sorry, against Canelo. You know what I'm saying? That's the, when we look at Pacquiao in terms of his competition and where he's transitioned in the airs like that, we really don't – that really doesn't conjure that same decisiveness in terms of where Pacquiao is at in comparison to Floyd. So that's why, side to side, I would pick Floyd's career over Pacquiao's.
Well, you
great
made
points
good
all
point.
Around. Say
this.
What's up?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Just want to say, yeah, great all-around points from you, Phil, and Courtney. We got cascading the careers between Floyd and Pacquiao. Great stuff. And before I jump to the next segment, I got to ask you, Phil. Hey, Phil, are you down to stay with us to the end of the show, or you got to go? Because we want you to stay on with us if you can.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to stay. I'm going to hang on. I'm going to stay on.
All right, cool. Great. Now, the last topic for this podcast is going to be Guillermo Rigondeaux. So we all know he also fought this past weekend with a second round knockout over Julio Seja. And I just want to get everyone's thoughts about his path to becoming a champion again, because at super bantamweight, because at one point in time, he was an undisputed unified champion at the division, but over time, because of inactivity, because of time gaps, he's been losing belt. He's been stripped belt after belt, and on top of that, he had an unfortunate loss to Lomachenko. So, given all of that, I'll start with you, Phil. What is your outlook on Rigondeaux's comeback, and do you see him becoming a champion again before he hangs up? Before he calls it a career.
Well, congratulations to him. You know, I felt like he was getting hit too much, if you ask me. He was fighting too much. He wasn't doing the normal Rigondeaux, you know, in the ring, you know, being a technician more so. He was inside fighting the other guy's fight. I forget his name when he was fighting, but they were both just standing in the middle of the ring going in. And shit, damn on Brady. I'm sorry, y'all. But yeah, Rigondeaux, I want to say I'm glad he found a way out of the contract he was in, and got with Al Heyman. I think him being with Al Heyman has helped him a lot, put him in a situation where he could be a title holder again. But I don't know, going from here, like who would he be favored to in any other fight other than, you know, someone less of an opponent than he is. Because, like I said, that guy that he was fighting had been just a little bit smarter in the ring. He could have beat Rigondeaux, if you ask me.
Right, right. Courtney, what did you thought about that fight? And your thoughts on his possible comeback trail to becoming a champion again?
That was a good fight, but and it was a good performance by Rigondeaux. I think most people who love and respect Rigondeaux as much as, you know, us on this panel, we're just happy to see him back in the ring under, you know, under any conditions. You know what I'm saying? If he had been in there fighting a circus elephant, I think we would have been, on our feet cheering for the guy. But it was a little disappointing. It was a little disheartening to see him basically go the Lara route. In which Lara showed again in his fight against Jared Herd, in which he's modifying his style and trying to become a banger in order to be more TV friendly. That was a very entertaining fight he had against Seja on the undercard this past weekend. But for me, it was just kind of sad to see him at this stage in his career taking receiving those right hands like he was receiving. He was giving them right back. He obviously got the desired result. But, I mean, he just can't – you know, the other champions at 122 right now are Emmanuel Navarrete, Daniel Roman, and Ray Vargas. I don't think he's going to beat any of those guys fighting like that. I hope it was just a ploy to be more crowd-pleasing and recognizable on TV. But I hope that he will not continue to fight that level of competition in that style, because at this point he has nothing to prove. And I think he came in there with the mindset that he had a little bit to prove after that embarrassing TV performance against Lomachenko. But I hope Rigondeaux goes back to being the classic Cuban style Rigondeaux that we all fell in love with, because he's a purist, and he's a thing of beauty to watch when he's on his shit like that. Also, one last point I'll make before I transition it to other Tommy. I also watched the fight with a little sense of disappointment, in that I really, really wish that we would have seen him enter the very exciting 118 tournament for the World Boxing Super Series. I think that's always going to be a great what if. When we look back on how entertaining that tournament has been, and then we look at in terms of Rigondeaux's career, if he would have ended up in the final against either a Zolani Tete or a Noyoya Inoue, and seeing what he could have done in that tournament, especially seeing as that Rigondeaux was really a 118 fighter who is just fighting at 122 for better money and for bigger fights. But I think that's going to be a really embarrassing blank spot in terms of when we look back at that tournament and think about what could have been.
I agree with everything you just said, brother.
Preach, man. I'm glad you finished with that, because you absolutely right. He could have put that. I mean, the series was already excellent. You know, let's not mistake that. Let's not get that confused for anybody that's listening to what we're talking about. Like, that series was great. Rigondeaux in that series, it would have been just completely over the top. So, like you said, that what if, and we've seen and heard other people talk about that and mention that what if, that's one thing that's going to cloud him in a lot of different ways. You know, yes, he did what he needed to do in this fight, but as we've already mentioned, he took way too many punches. He came out in a post interview and said that was his game plan. He wanted to show everybody that he could fight inside and he can give that type of fight. However, this is not the time and place for you to be trying to do that, bro. Like, that, this is not where you are at. You don't need to be trying
especially
to fill it out
at
right
his
now.
Age. He shouldn't be doing that.
Exactly. You do not be trying. You don't need to be trying to fill it out right now and trying to show people different facets of your game. Like, you are who you are at this point. You in your last few fights. Like, you're not a spring chicken, dude. Like, you don't need to be trying to change it up. So that's cool that he did it. And like Phil said, well, congratulations to him. Like, yeah, he won the fight and he did what he needed to do. Great. But what did you do for who you are? Like, dude, you were one of the most feared, most world-renowned boxers in the game for a minute. And look what you're reduced to at this point.
Hey, yeah, you're right. I remember when Rigondeaux was dumped heavily.
Like, that dude was – he was it. And now look at this. Look at what we're talking about. And he's standing there trying to prove himself. Like, what you trying to prove yourself for?
I mean, what if he maybe just want to go out on the shield?
And if that's what he want to do, then say that. And that's what he's been known to do. He's been known to talk that shit the way he feel like talking it and saying it the way he feel like saying it. So I understand the point of where I'm going to get out here and just show people this. But that, like, That gives the game no passion. That gives people no interest in what you can bring to the table going forward. Like, what do you have left after this? Who are you going to face after this? What are you going to do? Who are you going to be? Like, you're reducing yourself at this point. It's pretty disappointing.
Well said, Tommy and Phil and Corny regarding Rigondeaux. So this will be it for episode 35, season 2. I'd like to thank Phil again for calling in, supporting the podcast, and also supporting our group Pound for Pound. Props and much love to you back. Tommy, Courtney, as usual, thank you for joining me, and also Daniel Pena and Michael Gomes, who had to sign off earlier. Thank you guys as well. Be sure to catch us at our website, www.thestanding8podcast.com. You can find this episode and all our other episodes at Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. This is Aaron, from Los Angeles, signing off. Everyone, good night.
The Democratic debates didn't have nothing on us tonight.
To this day.
No, y'all have a good one.
No.
Hey, y'all put that
power design to be great. You know, that's one of the main things. The fact that it's another man on the other side of the ring that wants to hurt me.
I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time.
He can bring the pressure. He can box. I'm a true champion. I'm willing to go to his turf. I'm a step on him. I'm a crush him. Y'all can mark my word to this. I'm a crush him. He's a C-plus fighter. I'm an A-plus fighter because I'm a dominate. This guy is flat for these swing. While I'm not worried about who his trainer is because his trainer can't get in there and fight for him already, mentally, physically, because I'm a team like he's a C-plus fighter. I'm a dominate. I'm a dog this fighter. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion that's ever been. There's no one to stop me. Link with the conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Gibson. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairport. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat your children.
Can you? Listen. The concentration. Even a little bit. Pick it up. Pick it up! Fire's coming. Are you ready for the fireman? Those were firemen. We are firemen! The heat doesn't bother us. We live in the heat. We train in the heat. It tells us that we're ready. We're at home. We're where we're supposed to be. Flames don't intimidate us. What do? We control the flame. We control them. We move the flame where we want to.